Studio 360.
Getting our show on in about 5 minutes.
The Woodstock Festival happened 50 years ago, the weekend of August 15th, 1969. So this week, we're looking at that historic weekend with all its sex and drugs.
Now, people have been saying that some of the acid is poison. It's not poison. It's just bad acid. It's manufactured.
But focusing mainly on the rock and roll. People started calling baby boomers the Woodstock generation almost as soon as it happened. But like other people who weren't there, my knowledge of Woodstock comes almost entirely from the documentary that came out the following year, 1970. At 15, I devoured it. Crosby, Stills & Nash, Sly Stone, even Joe Cocker, and definitely The Who. Teenage me loved every bit of it. Although there were a few minutes in the movie that surprised me. It was a cover of the 1957 Danny and the Juniors song At the Hop by some group called Sha-Na-Na. The band is wearing leather jackets and the singers are in shiny gold suits doing choreographed high-stepping. Nobody has long hair. What was this jokey cornball novelty act doing at Woodstock? What did this have to do with peace, love, revolution, the age of Aquarius? Who were these guys?
So we were 11 undergraduates from Columbia, and we had drums, you know, rhythm, bass, and lead, and then the rest of us.
Robert Leonard was a founder of Sha-Na-Na, but just a few months before Woodstock in the spring of 1969, his group in New York City went by a different name. The Columbia Kingsmen.
Roar, lion, roar, and wake the echoes of the Hudson Valley.
We were what was called a small college singing group. Nowadays, it would be an a cappella group. Well, one of the guy's fathers got us an audition with a record company. Now, we didn't have a big set list, so what we all liked to do in our spare time was to sing doo-wop songs that our older brothers had introduced us to. So we said, why don't we sing some of those songs?
Please wait for me.
The record company audition was a bust, but the Kingsmen's doo-wop performances were popular around Columbia's campus. And Rob's older brother, George Leonard, noticed.
I was getting my PhD at Columbia. Basically, I was a novelist who had developed writer's block. I was just looking for something to do because I couldn't write anymore.
Yeah.
And George said to me, call the boys to your apartment. I want to talk to them. I called everybody to my apartment, and George came. And George, all 23 years old, right?
Older than the rest of them.
Exactly, yes, yes. But still, he looked at us all, and he pointed right in our faces to each of us, and he said, boys, I'm going to make you rock and roll stars.
Because lovers never say goodbye.
So it was your idea, Big Brother, George?
Yeah, I created it. The Columbia a cappella group had the use of Wallman Auditorium for a show. There was this one solid month before the show was going to go on.
And George said, now we're going to do costumes. Instead of wearing blazers, now we were like hoods, like juvenile delinquents, like what was later called greasers, in, you know, pegged pants and tight T-shirts with cigarettes rolled up in the sleeve and greased back hair.
I named the concert The Glory That Was Grease.
And this is 3 years before the musical Grease was on Broadway and before 50s pop nostalgia was even a thing.
Yeah, yeah. And three of us, George said, I need three guys who won't mind working hard and can dance. So three of us dressed in Golemé outfits a la Elvis Presley that George found in a defunct Bye Bye Birdie roadshow.
So it's 1969. You're, you know, a year earlier on the Columbia campus had been like the most famous student protest of that time, like one of the big ones.
We have taken the power away from an irresponsible and illegitimate administration. We are demanding that students and faculty have a say in the policies of the university.
The Columbia riots had been a ghastly experience. I think we ought to make clear, really, that it wasn't like all the students went into the buildings.
Sure.
The campus was violently divided. There were fist fights, there were battles. It was jocks versus SDS.
Students for a Democratic Society, the 60s left student group.
About 500 people joined us at the Sundial. We were opposed by about 200 jocks there blocking our way.
I mean, it was like the Civil War, only on campus, where people who had been pals and worn beanies together in freshman year were now really beating each other up on sight. Sean and I was supposed to be the opposite of that. And I had an idea that what could bring people together would be, well, here, this is what my publicity said. I wrote up these handouts publicizing the show, and it said, jocks, freaks, ROTC, SDS, hippies, let there be a truce. Remember when we were all little grease balls together? And I wrote, so you're a sophisticated college guy, huh? Bullshit. You know who you are, grease ball. Deep down inside you somewhere, there's still the same greasy kid standing on the corner in his continental jeans, watching the eighth grade girls, singing Duke of Earl to himself. For one glorious night, come to hear the Columbia Kingsmen sing the songs of your youth. Grease your hair back with KY. Roll up the sleeves on your T-shirt. Come as you were.
Remember then.
And they actually did it.
Really?
The left, the right, the people that had been fighting each other, it was beautiful.
Wow.
The left-wingers went to the right-wing fraternities afterwards and danced until morning. It was amazing.
That's interesting, because I would imagine the passionate left-wingers saying, no, you counter-revolutionary jerks, get away from me.
Not if you're in costume.
Yeah, so yeah. The costumes help?
Well, yeah, and I remember one time we were rehearsing, and I overheard a couple of SDS guys saying, come on, this is the revolution, come on, the revolution won't wait. And his friend saying, yeah, it will, come on, let's just watch this.
That sounds like a terrible, unbelievable scene in a movie.
I know. Well, so much of reality is.
Yes, indeed.
But we were a vaudeville act. We were a music hall act. I mean, intricate choreography, this highly stylized thing. George choreographed every...
Right.
Emotion, every hand movement, you name it. Everybody had his own persona. I performed death songs. That's what George assigned to me.
Death songs?
Yes. Teen Angel.
Oh, right.
Tell Laura I Love Her. He dies in a car crash trying to get her a diamond ring.
Right. There was a lot of that going around.
There was a lot
Dead
of that going
Man's
around.
Dead Man's Curve.
Exactly.
And at the time, was it campy? Is there a sense of parody in your intention?
I mean, we took these things seriously. We said, this is a script, this is a scene, and we're going to play it straight. And at Teen Angel, just sweet 16, and now you're gone.
Just sweet 16, and now you're gone.
And then I cry. And the crowds would just go crazy. So, I mean, there's a certain unseriousness because the plots are so absurd.
So there's tongue-in-cheek.
Yes, let's put it that way. That's good. Yeah, rather than parody, which right. sort of we're looking down on it. I finished with Teen Angel one night in the scene in Hell's Kitchen.
Best club.
That was the name of the club. Answer me, please. And I'm on my knees and crying. And I look up and... 6 feet away, there's Jimi Hendrix standing on a chair, jumping up and down, going, yeah, yeah. I said, oh, my God, Lord, take me now. I'm never going to have a better moment in my life. And very soon after, we were recruited to Woodstock.
Ladies and gentlemen, da-da-da!
So we went on at dawn.
Right.
The last morning, just before Jimmy.
Yip, 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 yip.
So you're at Woodstock. You had never played to several hundred thousand people before. What was the feeling like for you?
We were hams, though. We loved it. Yeah. With these stoned hippies saying to themselves, am I really seeing 12 guys, three of whom are in gold lamé in front of me? Oh, it must be the bad acid, you know?
Right. And George, you're there as well. I mean, you're not a singer, right? But you were the impresario?
No, I didn't go.
Oh, really? You missed it?
I was on vacation in Dubrovnik, Yugoslavia.
You missed Woodstock, dude.
He's one of the few people who doesn't claim to have been there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, so you look at the other acts at Woodstock, Jimmy, Country Joe, The Dead, mm-hmm. all the bands of that 60s moment. And then there's you playing the schmaltzy 50s cover set. You've only been a band for a few months. You haven't put out a record at all. Why were you at Woodstock?
Well, as somebody put it once, in a retrospective view of Woodstock, Sean and I showed us where we had come from, and Jimmy showed us where we were going. And you have to realize that all the big bands, like Jefferson Airplane and Janis and everybody, they loved us. They loved that music. They loved the recapitulation.
Because they had really grown up on it, because they're a bit older than you.
That's right. And also, there were 12 of us in full costume doing very complicated choreography. This was entertainment.
Wipeout.
The set list from, you know, 50 years later, looks so canonical about that late 50s, early 60s music. I mean,
yes.
You know, At the Hop, Jailhouse Rock, Get a Job, Book of Love, Teen Angel, Wipeout. I mean, you know, there was no internet then. There was no, like, rock and roll canon quite yet. So
right.
How did you just luck into picking the right songs?
No, Kurt, because we brought them back, that created the canon.
Well, that's my question.
I remember the guys bringing to me a record that finally somebody had found of Hound Dog, and everybody remembered it as, you know, ain't nothing but a hound dog. Actually, if you listen to it, it's you ain't nothing but a hound dog. And I said, don't do the way it really is. Do it the way everyone remembered it. So in general, we played everything twice as fast and twice as loud as anyone,
that's
as,
interesting.
As they had
so even as
been.
You were creating the canon, you were distorting it.
Absolutely.
The crazy thing, the thing that is so interesting to me about you at Woodstock is, you know, these songs, Dirk of Earl, you played, 7 years old. You know, none of these songs, almost none of these songs, are more than like 12 years old. And yet, everybody was struck by, wow, look at this crazy old-fashioned retro thing.
Some were 5 years old.
How is that? I mean, imagine, wow, look at that band. They're playing a music from 2012 or 2005.
That's right.
Crazy.
Yeah.
That could, that's
you're
unimaginable.
Right.
That's right. Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
You're right. You're right. Absolutely right.
That something seems so nostalgic so quickly. What was that about the 60s that made that happen?
Well, one thing was the change from one generation to another and the polarizing aspect of, you have to remember, and I'm sure you do, we are right in the middle of the worst war that we can think of.
Right.
Kurt, everybody you see at Woodstock is waiting to be drafted for Vietnam.
That was that polarizing thing. There was an articulation point there that we passed.
You know, and this to me is such a palpable demonstration of it. There is suddenly the musical Grease, American Graffiti, Happy Days, all, you know, in the next 5 years after Sean and I comes to exist. Sean and I was in the film Grease
movie,
as characters.
Yep.
So this turn into specifically late 50s nostalgia in American Graffiti and Grease and all the rest, but in general nostalgia. I mean, it seems to me Sean and I, Woodstock is the hinge moment for all of that.
Yeah, well, that's very true.
It was a new idea of the 1950s as this pre-political teenage Eden. It's very clear that these 50s had never existed, that I made them up. It hadn't been anything like that. The beatnik was the image of the 50s.
Right.
And we replaced that with the greaser.
Right.
It was this harmless, but it's completely invented. That's the miracle.
And I guess, you know, to the degree this nostalgia mania started, it was that, right? It was this respite from, oh my gosh, the crazy late 60s.
I think that's one reason that it was so successful. I don't know how many people cognitively said to themselves, oh, what a nice respite. Right. They were enjoying themselves.
Right. I want to look at another early Sha Na Na live performance from the Fillmore East in the East Village in 1970. It's an instrumental of The Ventures' Walk, Don't Run.
Right.
It's a really ferocious performance. The band, dressed as greasers, are writhing on the ground, jumping into the crowd.
My direction to them was, pretend that you have three kids up in a bedroom with guitars facing each other, just trying to make as much noise as possible. It's being played twice as fast as the original.
Well, and I look at this, I see, oh, guys in leather jackets playing high energy, old rock, too fast. I think, oh, it's the Ramones. Oh, you're inventing punk. And I'm serious.
No, we know. What Johnny Rotten said, oh, Sha Na Na. He says, they are me favorite.
I'm telling you, you have a real argument to say you were an early punk band.
I don't want to say that. They say they are a later Sha Na Na band.
Actually, we argue against them. They're always telling us that.
Yeah. Why? Oh, because you're nice and they're too nihilistic or what?
No, that sounds like we knew they were going to come along.
Yeah. Nobody knows anything. Artists don't know anything.
That's my point.
But we didn't set out to do punk.
I know you didn't set out, but here you are doing it.
We got just one thing to say to you fucking hippies. And that is the rock and roll is here to stay.
So the 50s nostalgia wave continues and grows. In the 70s, Sha Na Na continues, and starting in 1977, there was a national Sha Na Na TV variety show that lasted four seasons. But Rob, you were gone, right, by then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my day job was as a rock and roll star, but I always aspired to be a linguist.
And you became a linguist and kind of created a field all your own, right? Forensics?
I use the science of linguistics to help elucidate matters of the law. So who wrote a ransom note or assessing threats to the White House? And I've worked for the FBI and British intelligence.
Really? So it's in the age of DNA, the way that people form sentences actually has identifiable meanings?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm really proud that I started an innocence project at Hofstra University, where I'm teaching.
George, you too went on to become a distinguished professor, right?
I was assistant professor of English at Yale, and now I'm professor of interdisciplinary humanities at San Francisco State. And all the courses are full. Don't even call.
George Leonard, Rob Leonard, thank you very much. It has been my pleasure.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much.
Thanks. It's been great talking to you.
And here's an astonishing fact. In addition to the Leonard brothers, the members of Sha Na Na went on to become a law professor, a surgeon, a class action litigator, a professor of literature, an emergency room physician, an entertainment lawyer and Green Day's manager, and the provost of the Jewish Theological Seminary. Sha Na Na, featuring some of the original members, is on tour now.